Listen to Today with Sean O'Rourke with the RTE Radio Player.
You're welcome back to the programme. Now we are going to consider what is perhaps the most important task facing parents, how to ensure that their children have the emotional health and psychological resilience that they need to face the challenges of adulthood. Well, Paula Gilligan is a clinical psychologist and is chief executive of St Patrick's Mental Health Services. He's also the author of a new book called Raising Emotionally Healthy Children. And Paul joins me now in studio. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Caitlin. How are you? Thank you very much for coming in to us.
I suppose, Paul, first off, why did you feel you needed to write this book? What was it over your own career that you had seen that you wanted to address here?
Well, I've worked in the area of child protection, children's rights and mental health for over 30 years. And what really strikes me is the commitment, the dedication and the lengths the parents will go to look after their children. I mean, many of the parents I've worked with have had to face immense challenges. They've had difficult childhoods themselves. They've had to contend with poverty, educational disadvantage, and yet they will do everything to try and protect and look after their children. Then I've dealt with parents who could afford to fly their children around the world to get the help they needed, and they do that. So it's, I suppose for me, it was about saying, look, you know, I wanted to do something that would support parents. I wanted to try and write a book that would empower them and also would really, I suppose, remind them that, you know, they have the natural ability to parent. They just need to look into themselves.
So from what you're saying there, would you take it that virtually every parent is going to have this innate commitment to their children, but not all are equipped with the tools they need? Or have you also come across parents who simply aren't that interested in their kids?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, very few parents are not interested. I think what happens is that parents, they're challenged by life. I think they lose confidence and they often feel guilty. And they're the three things you come across. And then when a difficulty arises, they withdraw into those defence mechanisms that we all have. So they think, you know, so first of all, there's that guilt behind the thing. Am I doing enough? Have I given enough time, etc., etc. And it's really amazing because if you look at the statistics and the research, it shows that, in fact, parents today invest much more in their children than, say, in the 50s and 60s, even though many parents stayed at home. You'll find that parents now today spend much more quality time with their children. So I think
that's really interesting. What is that research? You know, because we do see ourselves as a very, very busy kind of population. And if we're not busy at work, we're watching screens at home.
Yeah, yeah. So when difficulties arise, parents, their first step is to think, have I let my children down? Have I done something? Have I spent enough time, etc.? So the first piece of it is really for parents to really look back into themselves and give themselves the space and the time to do that, to reconnect with the sort of the natural parenting stuff that they have, and also that key thing of loving their children. And it's a concept we don't talk much about anymore, is that sort of idea of love. But if you can reconnect with the love for your child, then you'll probably overcome pretty much any challenge. But, you know, life's the day-to-day issues of life, your own personal stuff, challenges around feeling maybe guilty or feeling that you're not doing enough, they prevent you from reconnecting with that love. But if you can do that, you'll overcome any challenge.
And in your book, you have a lot of exercises that parents, not a lot, I mean, let's not overstate it, but there are kind of forms. That is the first question. You ask parents to maybe take a look at some of these exercises and fill them out. And that is the very first question. When did you realise that you loved your child?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look. I understand. There's nothing more irritating than having somebody telling you how to parent. It's something that we, you know, it is irritating. And if you've got a guy who's, you know, a psychologist or a so-called expert saying, look, this is what you should do, it adds to that irritation. What I've tried to do in the book is really say to parents, look, I'm asking you to think about how you parent. I'm giving you questions that will help you to maybe think a little bit more about what you're doing on a daily basis, reconnect with the stuff you already have there, with your natural abilities, but also to maybe build awareness. And what I've tried to do is focus on five, I suppose, simple enough principles. One of them is this concept of connecting with love. The other one is teaching your child how to be happy.
I think that's a really interesting one. How do you teach somebody to be happy? Because, I mean, some kids are happier than others, aren't they? You can see that at any football pitch. You can see the child who takes everything really seriously and is devastated when they don't get the point or whatever. And you see the other one who takes everything.
Yeah, easily. I mean, well, happiness is individual, and I think one of the mistakes we make is we think, you know, you gotta learn how to be happy. I mean, it's a skill. It's an ability that develops over time. It's not something that comes natural. So things that parents can do are things like, you know, helping children see that they're individual and celebrating that individualism. So comparisons don't help.
So if they don't get top grades and something in school, don't be going on about how Billy got top grades and you didn't, yeah, and can you not work harder?
And exactly. And that's sometimes more difficult than you think, because we sort of live in a society where we compare and compete. So, and there's always a worry that, you know, I have to teach my child how to compete. But allowing them be individual, celebrating their strengths, and not comparing them to other people,
What if they're comparing themselves all the time? Because kids do that, don't they, within classes? You know, so-and-so did better than I did, or has better runners than I have, or, you know, yourself. I mean, yeah. How do you teach them to step back from that?
And that's about modelling good behaviour in regards to that ourselves, and really emphasising all the time that it's not about what everybody else is doing, it's about what you're doing yourself. And you look at some of the things that people are doing. Athletics is a great example. I think they're really good at this. They concentrate on their own individual performances. They don't keep emphasising beating another person. They feel that the medals and the results will come. And that's a very good example of how you could work with your children around this sort of thing. The other thing is helping them understand and their own emotions, helping them understand how to interpret feelings. And that's an ongoing process that occurs right the way through childhood. And of course, for us as adults, it continues right through adulthood. But it's helping them as early as possible for them to understand how they're feeling and how they're demonstrating that their feelings.
Yeah, you write in the book about talking to your children about feelings. When you're dealing with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds, you know, younger children who maybe don't have a great grasp on emotions, how do you do that? If your child comes home upset, what do you say to them? I mean, if you say to your child, how do you feel? They'll just go hungry. They'll never say to you, I feel sad or...
Yeah, I think it involves understanding what your child's abilities are. So understanding their developmental capabilities. There's no point in trying to talk to a 4 or 5 year old in depth about emotions. It's taking them at their own level. So using words that they're words. So if they use the word sad, you use the word sad. If they use the word I'm feeling bad, which we interpret as being sad, well, we stay with that. We keep it nice and concrete with children who are under, say, 8, 9. As they start to develop their ability to think abstractly, we move with that. So it's all about keeping it very developmentally appropriate is really, I suppose, the best way to describe that. And what that means in simple terms is saying, look, I know my 4-year-old has this capability, so we'll talk about emotions at that level. I mean, if you look at the Disney film that's out at the moment, a great example of that. Keeping it child-friendly, child-centred, and you'll get there.
Yeah, and that film really teaches that sadness is part of normal life as well, doesn't it? And it has to be embraced sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the important things for parents to remember, that happiness isn't something that can be there all the time. In fact, you've got to allow children be sad, be angry, to experience that whole range of emotions. I think the other thing to focus on is this whole thing of shaping thinking and behaviour. So, you know, helping children as early as possible to understand that they behave in certain ways, what that means, and helping them shape that to think positively and behave positively. Ignoring the negative behaviours, ignoring negative thinking, and trying to reinforce all the time positive thinking.
So ignore the negative stuff rather than chastising it or dismay. There is, Paul, also a growing belief, isn't there, in modern day society, that parents are too praising of their children, that children get praised for everything, from, you know, finishing their carrots to stuff that is really very mundane everyday tasks, and that we need to lighten up a bit, and their children need to learn that they're not always going to get praised for ordinary stuff, and they need to be equipped to get on in the world, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think that raises a very important part of parenting, which is honesty. Children see true falseness very fast. So if you say to a young lad, listen, you played fantastic, when he knows he played terrible, you know he's going to look at you. I think it's about being honest but staying positive. So you can say things, you can reinforce the positive without falsely praising. There's no point in giving young people false expectations. So and children see through that. So staying honest is really important, and you can do that and yet stay focused on the positive if you give it a little bit of thought.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Honesty rather than negativity. You don't have to dwell on the negative, but you have to be honest about it. If he fell over during the football game and really messed up.
Yeah, exactly.
to pretend he didn't.
Exactly. I mean, you can say things like, look, you made a few good passes, you've had better games, and children appreciate that, and they'll hear that. That'll still reinforce for them, you know, you're good at this, you're a good guy on the pitch, but it's not giving them false expectations, and they'll believe you. So when then you do say something, and when they do play very well, then they'll obviously they'll know that, and they'll appreciate the honest and positive commentary.
A person's been in touch here saying that some parents are not narcissistic and have no maternal or paternal instincts. This person asks, how should children of such parents react or cope with this? It would sound like this person's speaking from personal experience here. Have you come across this? The parents who
I don't agree with the concept. I think that what happens is that I've never come across a parent that hasn't got the capability to love their children and to connect with their children. I have come across many parents who have so many challenges or are so preoccupied with other things in their lives that they're failing to give the time to trying to invest.
You could say, though, that they're choosing not to give the time. They're choosing to put the time elsewhere in their lives, choosing to not give it to their kids.
Yeah, but deep down, most of those parents want to give the time, but they've gotten into a negative pattern in their lives, and it's really difficult to break that. And of course, children will reinforce that, because the children start to engage in negative behaviour and negative reinforcement because they're not getting from their parents what they feel they should get. I think for those parents, it's about reflecting. It's about really searching within themselves to see how they can break those patterns, because inevitably those parents will come and seek help. They will go to friends. They will realise that they want to reconnect with their children. The difficulty is that they find it very difficult to break those patterns.
And Paul, just briefly, is it always possible, if you have a child that is not a happy child, or you know is kind of struggling emotionally, is it always possible to make a difference?
Yes, and I mean, even if you look at children who have serious mental health difficulties, they can absolutely recover. They can live really good lives. The challenge for us is to give them the proper supports, to engage with them, to help them through that difficult time. But absolutely, I mean, every child has the capacity to live an emotionally healthy life. It's really about us as parents and teachers and carers trying to work to ensure that we give them, we allow them to realise that potential.
Okay, well, Paul Gilligan, thanks very much indeed for coming into us this morning. The book is called Raising Emotionally Healthy Children, and it's published by Veritas.